This is Fanatic Flyers Weekly
on 97.5, The Fanatic.
This is your home for Philadelphia Flyers hockey.
This is Fanatic Flyers Weekly, only on 97.5, The Fanatic.
Yeah, it is hockey night in Philadelphia as the Philadelphia Flyers are going to take on the cross-state rival Pittsburgh Penguins tonight, 7:30. You'll hear all the action right here on 97.5, The Fanatic. It is Fanatic Flyers Weekly. Jason Martinez, Brian Smith. We have a special guest right off the hop, Gord Miller, doing the game tonight for NBC Sports, also of TSN. And I want to start here, Gord, because you're doing the game tonight with Mike Milbury. Now, when you come to Philadelphia and do a game with Mike Milbury, I know when you do games with Ray Ferraro, you probably go out to dinner and you feel fine. But when you go out to dinner with Mike Milbury in Philadelphia, do you feel safe?
I do. although last night, Mike's wife is here, so Ginger was in charge of taking care of Mike, so I didn't have
security.
I didn't have the responsibility. I did ask. I will confess. I did ask for a parking spot as close to the arena as possible.
Smart move.
And I recognize that Mike is a beloved figure wherever he goes, but some places he's more beloved than others.
Yes.
So maybe not as much here, based on his track record as a Bruin and an Islander.
And his commentary along the way.
Mike says what he thinks.
Yeah, well, you cannot deny that.
So you can't deny that Mike is... He is entertaining, and he's outspoken, and that's what you want, right?
Yeah, you want a guy that's going to give his honest opinion, and even though he comes at it from an anti-Flyer angle,
here's the thing, this is really important to, because you know when I broadcast games for NBC, we're objective. Uh-huh.
You're calling it like you see it.
So if you love the Flyers, and I say 8 really good things about the Flyers, and 2 bad ones.
We remember the bad.
You see, you're anti-Flyer.
Yep.
Right? So the Flyers are 23rd in team save percentage right now.
Get out, Gordon.
So that doesn't make me anti-Flyer. That's a number.
Yeah.
That's a statistic. It doesn't make me anti-Flyer. So I do think there's an important distinction.
No, great parallel, and you're absolutely right.
I will say this. I love coming to Philly. I love doing games here. I think that sometimes maybe fans here have a hard time being objective about their teams.
Oh, just a little bit.
I think maybe a little. There may be a little.
A tick?
Just a titch of trouble being objective.
Yeah, everybody thinks Chris Collinsworth hates the Eagles. Or, you know, every analyst of every sport hates our team.
Do you know what every broadcaster wants? A close game.
Yeah, a good close game.
That's what you want.
Yeah, compelling and close.
Because 7-1 is no good for anybody.
No, and you guys got to. It's just tough when you lose almost interest in the result of the game because it's so out of hand.
Right. Now, there are some exceptions to that. The Dallas Cowboys are an exception. When the Cowboys are losing badly, ratings actually go up a little bit.
Yeah, everybody's cheering.
In the Cowboys, the Toronto Maple Leafs in Canada, are the rare teams that half the audience loves them and half the audience hates them, right? And so no matter what, they're compelled.
Yeah, and nobody's ambivalent on those teams.
No.
Yeah, that's like, a good thing.
I don't think people hate Philly teams outside of Philadelphia. I mean, there's rivalries and stuff, but I don't hear people going, I hate the Eagles.
Yeah.
Right? You know, the Flyers had their time when they weren't super popular outside of Philly because of the, you know, the Broad Street Bullies and stuff like that. But, I mean, this is a great place to come into a game. Anywhere you come where there's passion and the team's got tradition and history is a great place to do a game.
Well, one of the subplots tonight is, obviously, it's the Penguins. That's an in-state rival, and there's a lot of history here. And Evgeny Malkin kind of ripped his fan base last week and used the Flyer fans as the example of what not to be. So, he might get a few boos tonight, more than normal.
But what he said was, you know, we're used to getting booed in Philadelphia, but not at home.
Oh, I read it a little differently. No. I read it that he was saying that happens in Philly where they, you know, give the Bronx cheer to your own team.
No, I think what he meant was, my take on it was what he meant was, we get booed in Philly. Like our guys get it in Philadelphia. We shouldn't get
it at home.
And I do think...
I'm going to go ask him for clarification on the air. Think he'll give it to
right
me?
Down the hall, yeah. He'd love to talk to you.
I'm sure.
But I do think that, you know, his point was the guy won us 2 Stanley Cups.
Yeah, give him a little latitude.
In 16 and 17. Like, have you forgotten what he did as a rookie winning those 2 Stanley Cups?
And he's right.
He is right, yeah. But this is an unforgiving profession. And you can't live on what you did in the past.
Yeah, it's a results-oriented business in the moment.
And you know, Philadelphia... And Pittsburgh have both gone through this. But, I mean, you look at what Pittsburgh's had with injuries and everything else. Tristan Jarry is carrying this team. He's starting tonight for Pittsburgh. He's
All-star.
He's tied for the league lead in save percentage.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so fans have expectations of players, and you're going to hear about it. And, look, we know here what it's like. We know what it's like in other cities. But I think that there's nothing that annoys players more than hearing their home fans give it to one of their teammates. And I don't care how unpopular that teammate is. I don't care how poorly he's playing. But it's so counterproductive when the home fans get on a home player. And for whatever reason, fans tend to single one guy out.
Oh, yeah.
One guy tends to become, for whatever reason, the lightning rod for fan anger.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that really infuriates their teammates.
Yeah, no question. Well, they're a family. They want to protect each other as well
right.
and stay bonded. The game tonight, Flyers-Penguins, it's right before the Flyers break. All-star game coming up this weekend. This matchup, though, this Penguins team, because you cover a lot of games around this league for a long time. They've suffered some horrific injuries. Gensel out for pretty much the remainder of the regular season. Crosby just comes back and looks like he's 23 again.
Yeah.
They lost Malkin for a period of time. Letang. Mike Sullivan's got to be considered a Jack Adams candidate at this point. The job he's done this year. Why have they been able to sustain success with all that loss? And it's not. This isn't just fringe players for them.
I think one aspect is goaltending. Their goaltending has been spectacular.
And that's Jarry this year.
And has kept them in games. So they've managed to do that. Number two, they draft and develop players really well. So they've been able to pick out guys in the second, third, fourth round. You get a Brian Rust. You make the trade for Jared McCann. They seem to find the hardest thing, the amazing thing about the Penguins is how they manage to find scoring depth even with the salary cap, being up against the salary cap like they are. Now, the one advantage they have two superstar players. And between them, they make less than $17 million.
Yeah, percentage of cap, that's very advantageous.
So for Crosby and Malkin to be the superstars that they are and to make comparatively that little on the cap helps them a lot. But their depth, however they've managed to do it, and their goaltending has kept them going. And I agree with you. I think the job that Mike Sullivan's done and the freakish injuries, guys getting clipped in practice and you name it. Columbus is the same way. Columbus had 12 guys on IR 2 weeks ago. They've got six guys in IR now. They've won, six in a row?
Yeah, they're steaming right now.
Yeah, like it's amazing.
With Elvis Merlikins, the guy who sets up the backup.
And again, that's goaltending, right?
Yep.
So if you show, look at the coaches that have been fired this year.
Seven of them?
What's the common ground?
None of them got goaltending.
None of them got goaltending.
But goaltending is also not just a product of goaltending. It's a product of environment.
Absolutely. I think, if you
look at San Jose and I go, maybe Martin Jones isn't that great anymore, but still, that environment is not good.
If you watch the Pittsburgh game on Sunday against Boston, and Mike Sullivan said this morning, he contemplated pulling Matt Murray from the net, but he said, there was a lot of other stuff going wrong.
Yeah.
Besides the goaltender, like 3-on-1s, 2-on-0s.
Oh, yeah, odd man rushes and high danger chances. That'll mess any goaltender up for sure. Let me ask you about this Flyers team. Your perspective, being up in Canada and being all over the league, this is a team that a lot of people felt coming into the season was a fringe playoff team. That's proven not to be the case thus far. They've suffered their fair share of injuries as well. They're dealing with one with Carter Hart right now. This Flyers team, your assessment of where they are right now and maybe what they need as we approach the deadline in about a month's time.
They're really interesting because they're kind of making the transition, aren't they, from a team of, of Giroux and Voracek to the team of Konechny, Provorov, the young players that are kind of, Carter Hart when he comes back. You're right. They were viewed as a bubble team at the start of the year. That's probably what they are. I think what the Flyers need most is some time. They need to just let these young players germinate, mature. Look, Konechny looks like a really good young player.
Yeah.
Doesn't he? Morgan Frost is going to be a really good young player.
Farabee, another young guy.
Farabee's a really good young player. Hart, Provorov. That's going to be the core of the Flyer teams. If they become an elite team, that's going to be the core of their team. So it's hard to counsel patience, but I think that's where they're at. I mean, if they get healthy, they've got a pretty decent schedule after the break. I think they only leave the time zone once after
a horrific first part.
Right? They go and they do have a bad schedule in terms of back to backs. But they only go to, I think they go to Nashville is the only time they leave the time zone in the second half of the year. So it's set for them. They're in a dogfight with Columbus, Toronto. All those teams kind of swimming around. It's going to be like
six of the top 13 teams are in the Metro.
Yeah, and so they're in a tough division, but I think. If the big thing for them is to be better on the road. It's one of the strangest things we've seen in recent years, the difference between the Flyers at home and on the road. I think the goal differential at home is like plus 35. It's the best in the league. And then they're minus 30 on the road, which is among the worst.
Jekyll and Hyde. It's almost
which doesn't make
unfathomable.
Sense. Which doesn't make sense when you think about it, because the league has changed so much. Like, you don't have the Boston Garden, the Odd in Buffalo, the Chicago Stadium, which were, the dimensions were different. You know, there was a distinct home
cranking
ice advantage.
Cranking up the heat in the visitor's locker room.
The buildings are essentially the same now.
Yeah.
So there shouldn't be that much of an advantage, but for the Flyers, there seems to be.
Yeah, and they got to find a way to deal with that. Real quick, as six of the top 13 teams in the Metro, does the NHL need an overhaul in their point system?
Well,
a lot of talk about 3-on-3 extension, no shootout.
Yeah, I'd like to see every game worth 3 points.
Because a lot of games getting to the 3-on-3 that shouldn't be getting.
Right,
to the
I think regulation win should be worth 3 points. Then overtime or shootout win should be worth 2, and the loss worth 1. It's not fair. So say the Flyers are chasing Columbus and Toronto for the last playoff spot. They play each other and go to overtime. The Flyer game is only worth 2 points to them, but the teams in front of them played in a 3-point game.
Yeah, you hate seeing those.
That's not fair. So
it's hard to make up ground.
But it's going to happen every time where you're going to have a situation where one team's going to miss the playoffs with more points than a team in another division or a team in the other conference. It's going to happen. I don't think they need to overhaul it beyond, I think, making every game worth the same number of points.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Last question for Gord Miller from NBC doing the game tonight, along with Mike Milbury and AJ here at the Wells Fargo Center, also of TSN. Alexander Ovechkin, what a week he had, huh? 8 goals, 3 games, and he continues not slowing down at all. Is he the greatest goal scorer, pure goal scorer this game's ever seen? It's hard to compare errors, but yeah.
I covered Wayne Gretzky in the 80s. I was in Edmonton in the 80s. I think he is. I think when you look at his performance relative to the league, you know, Gretzky scored 894, but spent a good chunk of his career in a league where 8.5 goals were the average per game. This is a guy who's you know, coming on 700 goals, and the league averaged like 5.2 goals a game. I think he is. The amazing thing about Ovechkin is he basically only scores goals two ways. The one-timer from the circle.
On the power play.
And a rebound in tight. He doesn't score in breakaways. He doesn't score in wraparounds. He doesn't score in deflections. It's amazing to think that you know. I think that's the greatest testament to an athlete. You know what he's going to do, and he does it anyway.
And you can't stop it.
It's incredible when you think about it. Like, yeah. Everyone in the building knows where he's going to be and knows what he's going to do, and he still does it.
It's amazing. It is absolutely it's unbelievable with the velocity which he can shoot and the accuracy, and he just hasn't slowed down at all. He's got a lot of salt and pepper in that hair, but it doesn't matter.
Are you guys going to have me back talking about Pittsburgh and Washington in complimentary terms like that? Like, you might not want me back now.
Well, we'll just talk about the player. We're not going to talk about the team.
Okay, fair enough.
Hey, Gord, thanks for doing this.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it. Have a great game tonight.
See you guys.
Gord Miller from TSN and NBC Sports joining us here on Fanatic Flyers Weekly. Brian Smith with us as well. And getting ready for Flyers, Penguins. Schmitty, what would be your fix for the point system in the NHL? Because I don't like it either. It's hard to make up ground with these three-point games. And so many teams now, in one-goal games or tie games in the last eight, nine minutes of a game, are just sitting back going, just get me to the overtime. I'll get the point, and I'll go for the second one and see what happens in the three-on-three.
And it's even more frustrating from, you know, the other teams in the division perspective. You watch, you know, one of these games that gets into overtime between two teams in the same division, and you know that somebody's going to get a point. Or even not even the same division,
you're chasing,
in the same conference.
Right?
Yeah, you know, you're being chased. So, you know, each team's going to get a point. And, you know, like Gord said, your ability to catch them is limited. You know, one of the reasons I like the idea of a three-point win is just watching how it works in the English Premier League, because those are three-point games there. You have 3 points for a win, 1 point for a tie, and nothing for a loss. And, you know, if you look at the way it's shaping up right now, they don't have playoffs in that league, obviously. And if you don't have playoffs, it can be anticlimactic, because, you know, those of you who pay attention to that league know that Liverpool is going to run away with everything and probably clinch with a month left in the season. So that's anticlimactic.
And play meaningless soccer,
right.
Therefore.
Well, there's just no playoffs. It's just done. You're scrimmaging almost. So if you combine that with the playoff system the NHL has, I think it would make for some really exciting
home
stuff.
Run.
And you know, it's either that or this league's got to look at some kind of play-in situation. Wild card, I don't know. But
one game play-in.
You don't want to, I mean, I can see you don't want to expand past 16 teams in a playoff situation, but this is a lot different league than it was, you know, 20 years ago.
When 19 teams.
Yeah, when you put 16 teams in the playoffs and, you know, the last two teams are just kind of there for to show up. You know, they're not going to win that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everybody is.
Well, look at last year.
Columbus exactly.
sweeps the President's Trophy 128-point Tampa Bay Lightning right on the first round.
So unless. And if you don't want a situation like a few years ago in Boston that 96 points didn't make it, that's going to start happening more and more and more. And I don't know that, I don't know if that's good for the game or not, but, you know, I think it's time for something to adjust, I think, just with the way things are going right now with the parity in this league, what the salary cap has done to, you know, to make these teams even. And now we're going to be up to 32 teams.
Yeah.
You know, for half of them to, not get a shot, you know, maybe that's a little much. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's hard on those teams. You don't make the playoffs, and it's evidenced here in Philadelphia. That's a big missed opportunity for revenue and a lot of other things for a team. And when you had 19 teams in the league, you go, okay, well, you know, what the old saying was, everybody makes the playoffs in the NHL. Well, damn near everybody did because there was only 19 teams.
And you were able to, you know, pretty much buy your way in. You know, You know, look at how many trades the Flyers made over the years where, you know, they would just, you know, bring in some big gun and get themselves in the playoffs. And then, you know, they give up a draft pick. You know, who cares? They'll just go out and sign the next big free agent. Well, you can't do that anymore.
Because you have an unlimited wallet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And other teams have that advantage and other teams don't.
Right.
Especially at that time. But now everybody playing with the same deck of cards, if you will. Flyers Penguins tonight here at the Wells Fargo Center. Pittsburgh, this team has been astounding to me this season. And just watching them and what they've been able to do with all these injuries, 67 points right now through 47 or 49 games. The Flyers right now with 58 points through 49 games. And Pittsburgh on the road this year, 13-8-2. Flyers have been great here at home all season long. Just four regulation losses. Brian Elliott tonight, Schmitty?
Yeah.
Elliott versus Tristan Jarry tonight. No Matt Murray tonight. Jari's going to go to the All-Star game. He's been sensational for them all season.
And you know what? I should have asked Gord this, but I think, I could be wrong here, but I think that Tristan Jarry might have only been on the roster in the first place because they didn't have cap room for Casey DeSmith.
That's exactly right.
It's like, it's just the one of the situations where you think you're having to make a sacrifice and ends up being a boon. You know?
It's the luck sometimes that happens, and they're going to have to make themselves a decision now. Do they go forward with Matt Murray, or do they go forward with Tristan Jarry, who's not at a commensurate contract, so they can save a little bit of money there as well and put it in other places? Because, you know, that general manager likes to wheel and deal, Jim Rutherford.
Yeah.
Eventually, that credit card bill is going to come due, though. You know, I thought it was going to start to come through this year.
But, he's done it in two places now.
And he keeps doing it.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And they're right there in the mix again to do some damage here in the postseason. But the Flyers and Penguins tonight, always a fun night when this happens at the Wells Fargo Center. So here's what's coming up on the remainder of Fanatic Flyers Weekly. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, just a couple minutes, we're going to talk to Chris Therrien. He'll join us for a little Flyers-Penguins chatter, and we'll revisit some of his moments against the Penguins over the year. Of course, his job was always real simple. Shut down Jaromir Jagr, number 68. So we'll talk to Bundy coming up at 6:30. Then coming up after that, Brian had a chance to sit down for a conversation with Flyers defenseman Matt Niskanen. So we'll hear from Niskanen, and he's a guy I'm sure looking forward to the break as well for to get a little R&R over the next week or so. And then at the top of the hour, I had a chance to sit down with Flyers goalie coach Kim Dillabaugh, who is he was very responsible for the growth of Jonathan Quick out in L.A., where he was a director of player development and goaltending coach there. And the 8 years he was there, he worked with Quick extensively from the time he got to the NHL, developed him into a two-time Cup champ, Conn Smythe winner, and an Olympian, one of the greatest goalies in the league for a decade.
And then when we talked to Matt Niskanen, he's got a really unique perspective on this rivalry because he played for Pittsburgh, played against the Flyers in the 2012 playoff series, got traded to Washington. Played against the Flyers in 14 and the Penguins. Played a big series against the Penguins after that. And then now he comes here and is part of it on this end. So he's got a really unique look at what this whole thing is like.
Boy, he's got a lot of Metro division in
him. Yes, he does.
So we'll hear from all of those and Bill Meltzer as well coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. It is Fanatic Flyers Weekly, and we're coming to you live from the Wells Fargo Center. It's Brian Smith. Chris Therrien will join us next right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
This is Fanatic Flyers Weekly
on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
This is Fanatic Flyers Weekly.
And a friendly score on the rebound. Claude Giroux deposits it into the empty goal.
97.5 The Fanatic.
We are back live at the Wells Fargo Center's Fanatic Flyers Weekly. Jason Martinez at the announcer's desk, sharing it with Brian Smith. We're going to talk to Chris Therrien momentarily. Also going to hear Brian had a chance to sit down with Matt Niskanen. And you brought up a good point, Schmitty. He's played for the Penguins against the Flyers for years. And in a playoff series, the Caps. Won a cup with the Caps, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And also, obviously, now playing here in Philadelphia. A lot of Metro. I guess, is the Isles that he has to go to before he finishes out the career? Or the Rangers? Or
Yeah, I mean, he's got three of them down. He started in Dallas, came to Pittsburgh, Washington, then here. So he would have a while to go to take the complete loop in an eight-team division. But, yeah. It's pretty unique perspective when you have rivalries like that. I'm not sure that... I'm not sure there's another division in this league. I mean, I guess maybe the Atlantic in some cities, but where... Yeah, where there's so many intra-division rivalries. You know, the Flyers hate the Penguins, they hate the Rangers, they hate the Devils, then you got the Caps hate the Penguins, and you know, all this go-round. It's a really fun division to be in.
It's a big cluster of Northeast hating each other.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of history to boot. So we'll talk to Chris Therrien, and we'll hear from Matt Niskanen, and we'll talk to Flyers goalie coach Kim Dillabaugh coming up at 7 as well, and Bill Meltzer join us here on Fanatic Flyers Weekly. He had a chance to sit down with Flyers assistant GM Brent Flair for a little update on all the scouts, or all the prospects, rather, and the latest on that, as we'll hear from Bill Meltzer on that and more here on Fanatic Flyers Weekly. Game at 7:30 tonight, Flyers and Penguins. Flyers still on the outside of the playoff picture looking in when you look at the stand. It's so close right now. Florida gets a crazy win last night to solidify their third spot. They tie the game with 3.5 minutes left, and then with 5 seconds left, they score. But it has to get reviewed because they thought it was a high stick, which it was, but the stick was lifted by Suter and not the player, so it counted. It was a wild win for Florida last night in regulation.
Hey, I'm glad I don't have to interpret all these rules sometimes and figure out what's legal and what's not. I mean, I obviously you want to get it right, but it can be tough to try to sit here and figure it all out. But yeah, I mean, all of a sudden Columbus.
Yeah,
I think
that?
They're dead in the water. They win five in a row. They're right back in the thick of things. It doesn't seem like that long ago where it was a situation where it was going to be like the top five Metro Division teams, and there was a big gap between them and the rest of the conference. But Tampa just came, you know, right up from nowhere, and I guess you kind of expected that. That was you see them down where they were in the standings,
too much talent.
And you knew that wasn't going to hold. Now they're 8-2 in their last 10, and you know, they had a lot of games to make up too, because they had a Europe trip like the Flyers did, but it happened during the season, so they went a stretch there where they were sitting 4 or 5 games behind everybody in terms of the number of games played, and they made them all up, almost all of them up with wins, it seems. So, you know, it is a tough go right now, and there is a drop off, you know, between the 10th and 11th team in the conference. It's 6 points right now from Toronto down to Buffalo, but for that drop off to take place outside of the top eight means there's going to be a heck of a run here toward those last two playoff spots.
Oh, no doubt. And joining us right now on Fanatic Flyers Weekly, you know him, you love him, it's Bundy. Chris Therrien joins us right now. Bundy, what's going on, buddy?
Hey guys, how you doing? Good to be on. National game tonight, so I'm kind of running double duties between the girls' basketball and the men's hockey. So I'll be I was just listening to you guys. You know what's really funny too? You talk about the rules and some of the stuff that goes on, and I'll tell you this 100% guarantee: when something like that happens on the ice, you talk about the Florida Minnesota thing last night. Most coaches and most players don't even know the rules that are on the bench.
Uh-huh.
That is the absolute truth. So you know what? You always leave it to someone else. I mean, you know the general rules, right? I mean, like the ones that really matter. But when something obscure comes up, it is really funny because everybody's kind of looking at each other like, I don't know the rules for that. But
there's new rules this year. Yeah, there's new rules this year where you, like, if you shoot the puck in, the other team shoots the puck in from the other side of the red line and your goalie freezes it, you can't change.
Yep.
A lot of guys don't realize it until the first time it happens.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And going to the knees on the face off and covering the puck with your hand, all kinds of weird stuff. It's over litigated, Bundy, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I hear you, pal. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Bundy, you played for the Flyers for a long time. Pittsburgh was no slouch in your day either. You had to deal with guys like Lemieux and Yager and some big-time players through your years. And, you know, when you look at your memories of playing against the Penguins, what comes to mind first and foremost, that five overtimer in May of 2000?
Certainly the greatest win I've ever been a part of was that five overtime game. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, we're down 2-0 in the series. You lost two games at home. We go on the road, we win game three in overtime, Andy Delmore, and then game four. And you know what it was? It was one of those games, too. You go back and you think about it, and you're saying to yourself, man, I'll tell you what, if we win this game, which I think we were all thinking we would, and we're hoping we did, we knew we'd win the series. Whoever won that game was winning the series. But that was the most memorable. I would say probably, you know, the coolest moment playing the Penguins is when you're on the ice in the NHL against Mario Lemieux. I mean, it's like, wow. Yeah. You know, make sure you keep an eye on that crest, because if you look at the puck and the stick, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. They had really, you know, I think a lot of the best of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And then towards the end of my career, before Crosby came in, I played 1 year against him. That was easily the worst of the Penguins prior to that, where they were picking number one and two every year in the draft. So I do have some great memories of great games against Pittsburgh. Yeah, great in-state rivalry that really, I think, had a chance to become the rivalry it has post my career, probably starting 2008-09 with Malkin and Crosby and company up against a lot of the guys in Philadelphia. So it's been a great rivalry, and I know that number 87 on the other side's had an awful lot to do with it.
No question about that. And he's been a hateable guy, and you have one of the epic rants of all time with him that's posted on YouTube for those that want to go back and take a listen and relive that moment when he went after Kimo Demonen. that's some of your finest work, Bundy.
You know what? And again, I mean, I was frustrated, you know, and I saw, and really what I was frustrated about was I saw this guy with this ton of talent, and he was going around the ice as a Canadian ice hockey player, I thought, in that game, embarrassing himself.
Yeah.
He's an ultra-competitive guy. He's growing up a lot. He's a terrific hockey player, and I'll say this, and, you know, he can't get any nicer. He's a top-five player all time in the history of the game, and if Philadelphia doesn't like it, well, that's too bad, but he is.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody's really disagrees with that.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you on that as well. By the way, on that five overtime game, you only played 71 shifts, 50 minutes and 44 seconds of ice time. Could you handle that now, you think?
Yeah.
In current conditioning?
Sure. Over five games.
10 minutes a night.
Yeah. I have a tradition.
I might be pushing it too right now at 10 minutes a night, but I'll finish with one thing on that game, and I think I've told it before, but the last three shifts, I remember coming back before Primo scored, and I told Wayne Cashman and Luke Richardson, I said, guys, I can't go more than a 15-second shift. Because I thought my knees were going to buckle. They were cramping so bad. And when Primo scored, I think it's the last amount of juice I had just to get up and hug him. I was kind of first on the scene. Richardson and McGillis got like off-ice assists. They were that's how quick we were changing. Move the puck out of the zone and change.
Yeah.
And I jumped out. I'm like, oh, thank God this guy just scored.
My favorite stat from that game is Keith Jones, 37 minutes, 50 seconds of ice time, 0 shots on goal.
Yep.
0.
Yeah, you understand how useless you got to be to do that in a game? Like,
he was a plus one, though. He was going for a change. He was too tired. He couldn't get off.
But you know what else I remember? And tell me if I'm wrong, guys, but did Craig Berube have 25 minutes in that game?
Yeah, 25-50.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, McGillis played 61.
Yeah, he had power play. They were really lumbering shifts late, man. I remember they were taking long shifts, and I'm like, I was fine with Gilly playing 11 more minutes or 10 more minutes that game. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank
Luke
you.
Luke Richardson, 59. Rico, yep. 56. I mean, my goodness.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, I imagine crazy, next morning you didn't feel great.
Well, we got home at 7 in the morning.
No, oh, jeez,
that's insane. Yeah, I think the game ended like 2:40 a.m.
Yep.
Bundy, this game tonight, Flyers on the outside by a point on the playoff picture, looking in right now. They got up to the third position in the Metro at one point, and obviously that trip over the holiday didn't do them any favors, but they beat a couple of quality opponents, had a slip-up against Montreal, but a nice bounce back here against the Kings the other night. Now you're getting ready to go into this little break with the All-Star game and mini bye week, if you will, to come away with a win here tonight where they've been good at home. But this Pittsburgh team has been no slouch, even with injuries, and now with guys like Crosby back, really dangerous. What do they got to do to get the win tonight and get the 2 points?
Crosby's been so good since he's been back. You know what, Jace? It's time. Like, they got to really – I think it's a matter now of them believing, like, hey, you know what? We're a far better team than we were early in the year when we got smoked, and we're a better team than the team that the Penguins have seen the last 3 or 4 years anyway. So I think a lot of it's a mindset. I think that they have got to have somebody go right after Crosby. I mean, honestly, guy, try to get him off his game somehow. Do what you got to do. But I think that they've given him too easy a ride. I think that there's been too much respect, to be quite honest with you. That doesn't mean you're not going to be able to do anything to like guy like Crosby like there was in the 1980s. But you know what? Get somebody on him. Get right in his wheelhouse in his kitchen and try to disrupt him and make him think about something other than playing a great game against the Philadelphia Flyers. The Flyers, for their part in the schedule, guys, I mean, to me, it's a simple formula for them. They cannot, and if you're the Flyers, my attitude might be saying in the room, every single game that you look at that you feel you deserve, you should win the 2 points based on looking at the paper, you have got to win that game. That meaning the Montreal game the other night. You're a better team than Montreal. I don't care what night it is, who you played, where you were. You have got to win the games against teams that you're supposed to beat. And if they do that, coupled with playing good hockey down the stretch, you're not going to win every game. They know that. I believe that will be enough to make the playoffs and qualify for a chance to try to win the Stanley Cup in the spring.
What's the difference on home and road? You played so many games in this league, close to 800 games. How is this so different at home than it is on the road? Can you crack that code?
For this team, it is. And listen, I can't give you a definitive answer. I've heard Matty Niskanen. I hear Matt Niskanen talking after games, and even the pressers after on post game live. He's like, I don't know. I will tell you one thing. It has been going past the St. Louis game out because they did a lot of good things, but it has been night and day. The stats, the special teams, the goaltending. I think it's goaltending. I really do think that if you get a couple quality saves here and there on the road, your
especially
numbers
early,
are like,
right?
A little bit. Yeah, early in the game. And that's really what the Flyers have done. They've been chasing games on the road. And when you chase games, you open yourself up to more offensive attacks because you fall behind the eight ball and you're trying to make it all up in one shift. And I really think that it's been a snowball effect. That's not taking a shot at Brian Elliott or Carter Hart. They just needed to get one or two more saves early in games, and I think we're in a different situation here.
Yeah, I think they'd probably tell you the same thing. Bundy, we'll see what happens tonight, man. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you soon.
Guys, look forward to it. Have a great night, and enjoy the, 9-10 days off. Have a great break.
No question about it. Thanks, Bundy. There's Chris Therrien joining us on the Fanatic Flyers Weekly. Yeah, how about that? Him playing 50 minutes in a game. Imagine that.
No.
That's insane. That's a lot of hockey, man.
No, it's funny. I was, you and I both had backgrounds in, regular old ordinary radio, and I remember that night I was going to work a 4 a.m. to noon shift at a news station the next day, and I stayed up as long as I dared stay up with having to get up at probably 2. I think I got up at 3.
Yeah.
And I remember I made it through the second overtime, went to bed. I remember getting up in the morning and thinking, I should turn on the TV and see if they're still playing. And, but like it was like a joke in my own head. Like,
yeah.
There's no way that they're still playing. I only missed him by 25 minutes.
Yes.
If I'd woken up 25 minutes earlier, I would have seen the end of the game.
I was in a bar, and they turned off all the TVs at 2 a.m.
Oh, no.
In the middle of, I guess it was the fifth overtime.
Yeah.
And I've never seen the bar empty so fast in my entire life. Everybody went to some guy's house right across the street, and that's where we finished up. Yep. Loaded up with 12 packs with us. All right, stay tuned. We've got Brian Smith's conversation with Flyers defenseman Matt Niskanen coming up right after this on Fanatic Flyers Weekly. Stay tuned, 97.5 The Fanatic.
This is Fanatic Flyers Weekly
on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
This is Fanatic Flyers Weekly.
And they score on the rebound. Claude Giroux deposits it into the empty goal.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, we're back live, getting set for it's a fun day in Philadelphia when the Penguins come to town. It's Flyers Penguins, a Keystone State rivalry renewed once again. Flyers and some dire need of some points here, sitting 1 point out of the playoff picture. It's mid-January, but you're getting down to the final 30, 35 games in the NHL season, and it's weird, you know, to talking to, who was I talking to the other day? I forget who I was talking to. Somebody before the game. Oh, Sean Couturier. At this point in the season, they were always chasing the standings and had to get red hot to even have a chance to get into the playoffs. So this year they're in position, so a little bit different, but still got to control your own destiny and get some wins, especially these division wins. Now, you had a chance to get the Matt Niskanen?
Yeah, absolutely. It was, you know, again, a unique situation in that, you know, Niski's new to this team, but came from the Capitals, of course, and before that was in Pittsburgh. So he has played against the Flyers in this scenario, and he has played for other teams against the Penguins.
Yep.
In both of them, in both situations, big playoff series. So it's, you know, again, a pretty neat thing, I think, to bring to a locker room, you know, especially for some of the younger guys on this team that have not really been in this rivalry yet. And I would say that goes for every rookie in that locker room, because the last game between the Penguins and the Flyers didn't really count in that rivalry because it did not go well at all. So, and they haven't played on home ice yet against Pittsburgh and gotten that experience. So it's really neat, I think, to see what he had to say.
Well, let's hear from Brian's conversation with Flyers defenseman Matt Niskanen.
With Matt Niskanen here ahead of the Flyers and the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight at the Wells Fargo Center. And Matt, you bring a bit of a unique perspective to this rivalry of anybody in our locker room. A couple of different angles. I guess, first of all, going back to when you were with the Penguins and part of that playoff series all those years ago, you know, what is it like from that side of things when you were coming into Philadelphia and now looking at it being on the other side?
Well, coming into this building, it certainly was always fun. Usually the most intense games of the year. It always seemed like we were neck and neck, and the games were always physical and heated, and that's what makes the games fun. So be interesting to see what it's like on this side now tonight, and I'm excited for the challenge.
And then you went to Washington, a little bit more of the same, and I'm assuming that was probably a little more unique for you, having come straight from there, as opposed to now you've got a team in between.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's a kind of a different side of the division rivalry between like a 3 or 4 team group here, probably with Pitt, Washington, Philly, and the Rangers. So we had another heated series in the playoffs with Washington. So I'm in a unique position for sure, and I think that just every game that I've been a part of with all three teams has been super intense and fun, and that's what makes it great.
What are your thoughts on this division this year, how everybody just kind of is rocketed to the top of the league standings? It's not as quite as glaring as it was maybe a month ago, but certainly a tough division to be in, and I'm sure that amplifies every game like this tonight in the division when you're you know, fighting for playoff positioning even here in January.
It definitely does. The last few years, it sure seems like the Metro has been really tough. Tough to just get in, and then ultra competitive within the top 4 or 5 teams, so maybe even 6 teams. So I think, you know, generally speaking, every 2 points is the same, but it seems to magnify when you play your division rivals and teams that were going to be jockeying for playoff position or fighting to get in or whatever it might be at the end of the year. So these ones are extra important.
Approaching the break here after tonight, what are your thoughts on where this team is right now? It's past the geographical halfway point of the season, but this is a lot of times considered that halfway point. Your thoughts on, you know, the first half and what this team needs to do coming out of the break next week?
Yeah, it's one more important game here tonight before the break, and we're in a good spot at this point. We're right there. And I think the exciting thing is we still have potential to grow. We're starting to figure out how we need to play to be successful, and we've proven it against good teams, so that's exciting. I always consider kind of February is moving month. You set yourself up for the last final push. If you can gain a few points in the standings in February on the teams that you're battling with, that sets you up for a real competitive March when everybody really tries to buckle down and it's the final push.
Where are you individually? I know you have obviously a lot of change just for you, but for the whole organization with the new coaching staff as well. Your comfort level seems to be there, at least what we see on the ice. What's that transition like at this point in the year?
Yeah, I thought I had a pretty good start to the season up until Christmas. I haven't been as happy with my play lately the last couple weeks, but overall, but it's coming. I feel like I'm right there where I can still contribute and be a positive, have a positive effect on the game every night. And as a group and myself individually, it's going to be important to just have real good focus for one more night here before the break, and then the real fun begins, you know, down the final stretch.
And in your experience, what does a break like this do for a team? I know for the Flyers' perspective, a couple of years, it's been a time when they didn't want to take a break because they've been rolling along with 8-9 consecutive wins this year, a little bit more even, but this is an opportunity, obviously, to rest and recharge and focus for the second half.
Yeah, I think probably mentally more than anything. We've beat some really good teams in the last couple of weeks, so that's exciting. And just like you said, ideally you'd probably want to keep it going, but I think everybody will welcome the break and kind of mentally recharge the batteries, so we're excited to come back, and because it's going to get amped up. The pressure of trying to make the playoffs and the final stretch run, it gets real competitive in the league this time of year, so I think recharging the batteries will do everybody good.
There he is, Flyers defenseman Matt Niskanen. Brian Smith's conversation with him. Unique perspective from a guy that played for the Penguins, played for the Capitals, and now plays for the Philadelphia Flyers, who are playing against the Penguins tonight. Can you keep track of all that? I don't know that I did, but great stuff. And we're going to hear from Flyers goaltending coach Kim Dillabaugh coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. But before we even get to that, we're going to take a quick timeout, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk to the man, the encyclopedia, the Flyers encyclopedia. He walks, he lives, he breathes. And he'll give us an update on all the prospects with the Philadelphia Flyers. He had a great sit-down with assistant GM Brent Flair. He'll give us all the details on that more. Bill Meltzer will join us coming up right after this. Stay tuned. Fanatic Flyers Weekly right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
This is Fanatic Flyers Weekly
on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
This is Fanatic Flyers Weekly.
And in front they score on the rebound. Claude Giroux deposits it into the empty goal.
97.5 The Fanatic.
This song's getting me pumped up for Flyers Penguins. Said no one ever. Jason Martinez, Fanatic Flyers Weekly. Brian Smith's been with us as well. We've had a fun show so far. Gord Miller of NBC and TSN joined us early. Chris Therrien joined us at the bottom of the hour. We heard from Matt Niskanen. We'll hear from Kim Dillabaugh, Flyers goalie coach, coming up momentarily. But joining us now, the man, y'all read him on NHL.com, PhiladelphiaFlyers.com, Hockey Buzz, Bill Meltzer. Bill, how you doing tonight?
Doing great, Brian. How are you?
I'm Jason, but Jason. Brian's over there.
Brian's over there.
I intimidated him with that great intro, man. That intro knocked you to your knees, and you're losing your marbles. I didn't. Can we take that again? No. I know I've been off the radio for a while, but geez, Billy. I don't even look like Brian. Nonetheless.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anybody's bragging about me. But you had a great sit-down with assistant Flyers GM Bert Flair, talking about some prospects, a little peek into what's going on down on the whether it's in junior or at the AHL with the Phantoms or all over the world, frankly. So give us the lowdown on a couple of players and how they're developing right now. Let's start with Morgan Frost.
Yeah, Morgan, Morgan took a little while to get going again after he went down from the Flyers. Fought the Phantoms had a road trip through Canada. Didn't go particularly well for him. The next set of three games were, a little bit better. Probably still not what they wanted. And then I think this past week, really, the Phantoms as a team have gotten going again. They've won five in a row. Three of them were shutouts, and Morgan was one of the key players in that stretch of games. Besides the fact that they had a two-goal game a couple of games ago and a really pretty assist last game, one of the goals he scored was a really highlight, real end-to-end kind of goal. But the one, that was more encouraging was his first goal of the game where he was up on his skates and he got to the scoring area and he stayed with the loose puck and he scored on that one. Those are the kind of things that he's going to have to do on a consistent basis to get back up at this level and score the way that everybody knows that Morgan can. Really, with Morgan, I think I've said this before, when I've been on, that it's never a question of his skill level, his hands, his ice vision, or his speed. Morgan, when he played in the top prospects game in the CHL, won the best skater competition, both with and without the puck. But there are times where Morgan doesn't look as fast as he is because he doesn't move his feet sometimes consistently enough. And in the junior level, you can get away with that. In the Ontario League, he could kind of slow down and survey his options, make a play, speed up again if he has to. Doesn't work very often at the pro level. He'll just be taken right off the puck, particularly as a guy who's not, especially big and strong. His first three games with the Flyers, I thought Morgan was played with a ton of pace.
Yeah, that's a lot of adrenaline there, too.
Oh, sure. And and you see that a lot. I thought you saw Joel Farabee, too, when he was first called up. And then, and then he starts to figure out how hard it is really up in this league. And then you fall back on what you're used to. And I thought that Morgan's pacing and energy fell off a little bit. And I think it was the right move to send him back down to Lehigh Valley. The only thing that I questioned was, not doing it at the Christmas break, waiting a game in. There was that bad game in San Jose that was really a bad game for the whole team, and Morgan was one of the guys who struggled in that game. I think if you're going to make that move, you maybe make it a little bit earlier. But other than that, I think it was the right move to send Morgan back down there. And he's working his way back up. He's put together three straight pretty good games. Let's see him continue that. And if he does do that, then he'll be back up here sooner than later.
And him now having that knowledge of what it takes, the level to which you have to bring to the rink every night at the NHL level.
Yeah.
You go back down there, you start bringing your, for lack of a better term, your baseline of play higher. And then when he gets back up, he'll be more equipped to handle it. So the other prospects that you got into with Flyers GM Brent Flair, give us some lowdown on a couple of the guys.
Well, we went level by level. So
okay.
We did Phantoms, Reading, collegiate guys, junior guys, guys playing over in Europe. I thought some pretty interesting feedback from Brent was talking about the guys who played in the World Juniors and some of the collegiate players, too.
Yeah, Bobby Brink.
And Brink was interesting because in the World Juniors, he was playing fourth line minutes, which is not uncommon for an 18-year-old in that tournament, but also playing in the first power play unit.
Yeah.
And he made good use of those minutes that he
Cole
had.
Cole Caulfield was actually on the second unit.
That's correct, yeah.
Which scratches my head, but...
Yeah, but... he's had a good first year at Denver. He's about as small as Caulfield, so he has to get bigger, stronger, those kind of things. But there's a ton of upside. A very ultra competitive kid. He's a small guy who plays bigger than he is sometimes. That can work for a player, can work against the player. As he comes along the way, but there's no questioning his hands, his hockey sense, or his competitiveness. So he's definitely a guy to keep an eye on. Cam York, the Flyers' first-round pick this past year, very fast-skating defenseman, a ton of offensive upside. The Flyers think eventually he's going to be a power play one kind of guy in the NHL level. Quick defensive stick, small. Probably why he fell a little bit in the first round of the draft. He was the number one defenseman, though, on that outstanding U.S. national team that had, I believe, it was 18 players.
Unbelievable class,
yeah.
They filled up the first round, too.
They did. And six of their defensemen got drafted.
Yeah.
And York was number one on that team. Having a good, solid freshman year at Michigan. You know, he's a guy that the Flyers are really excited for long term. He'll probably play a second year of college hockey. He definitely, you know, guys to get bigger and stronger. His game doesn't change very much. I think everybody was a little disappointed in the lack of ice time he had this year. On the flip side, though, he was the only 18-year-old on the Americans' blue line, so he'll be the only returning guy next year, and he'll be playing a lot of minutes, you know, a year out. Just has to stay healthy. You know, and then there were a couple other guys, Adam Yining, the Swedish defenseman, who's had a bit of an up-and-down season over in Sweden. Brent was talking about that. You know, he may come over next year to the Phantoms, may spend another year in Sweden. If he does spend another year in Sweden, he'll probably switch teams.
Yep.
This is last year of his contract with his current team. So a little bit of a similar kind of situation. If you remember that Robert Haig came over very young and spent several years with the Phantoms before he came up. Same kind of thing with Adam Yining. You might see that with him.
What about Lisinski? College guy.
Yeah, I know. He's one of the guys who the Flyers have two seniors in college hockey. So they have to make a decision on. And those guys have a decision to make, too. Are they going to sign this year? Or are they going to try to become free agents? If they become free agents, they have to wait until August 15th.
Mm-hmm.
The other guy who's in the same boat with Lisinski is Wade Allison, who's had a lot of injury issues.
Yeah.
According to Brent, the Flyers have very good relationships with both players.
Open dialogue.
Yeah, they feel pretty confident being able to get both guys in.
You're going to have to burn a year of ELC, though?
That would be, certainly in Lyshynski's case, you will.
Yeah, not with Wade Allison, but with Lyshynski, you're going to have to, right?
I think that's almost, and of course, the flip side.
That's the advantage for the player.
That's one of the players. You know,
it's the hammer he holds.
Now, of course, the Ohio State could play a while in March, though, so. Yeah. We'll see, because they're a good team. They could play a while. You know, they're Frozen Four contender. So we'll see.
So if they slotted him here, he'd be a bottom six forward.
I think so, and I think it might be sooner rather than later. Though he's has good size, good two way player. He's currently the first line center on Ohio State, but he's also played some wing. You know, he's played in different situations. Not the prettiest of skaters, but a very smart hockey player. The other guy that that Brent mentioned, I'd actually, in making my notes, I'd actually forgotten to mention him, but Brent made a point of it, was Noah Cates.
Yep.
Minnesota Duluth, sophomore player, was a revelation last year for the American team at the World Juniors. He's been outstanding this season, and he's a very, very smart hockey player. Even though he's only a sophomore, I would not be surprised if Cates is a guy who plays pro, within the next year or so.
Wow.
And there's also a defenseman, Wyatt Kalinick, who's an offensive-minded defenseman, a power play quarterback type. No, he's a junior this season at Wisconsin. Now, he's a teammate of Caulfield's, who we mentioned before. That's a guy who might come out after this year, too. That'll be up to him. Mm-hmm. The Flyers are comfortable either which way, whether he wants to go back for a senior year or turn pro now. So that's, potentially several guys coming in at entry-level deals.
Big injection of young talent, question.
Absolutely, and a couple of these guys are a little bit older. So you have a good baseline rather on what their upside might be and how long it might take to get them here.
Yeah.
Because of all the number of collegiate guys, you have a smaller pool of guys in Canadian junior.
Yep.
Of course, a year ago the Flyers picked all Americans and Swedes. So which was a bit unusual. So
what about Isaac Ratcliffe?
Ratcliffe, Isaac,
big body.
As with many power forwards, especially power forwards his size, it's going to be a process with him. He was a healthy scratch a couple times earlier this year with the Phantoms.
See what happens with those guys. They're bigger guys for when they're age appropriate, but when they get to this league, they're playing with men.
That's precisely it. Now playing in the Ontario League, there are a lot of things he can get away with.
Yep,
being bigger and stronger, and now
create a lot of space that way. Yeah,
absolutely, and. You know, when he got to the American League, well, pucks on the walls and the corners, especially that big, when pucks are around your feet, sometimes people don't realize that pucks are around your feet when you're, the kind of reach and stick that he uses, that can be hard for guys his size. Learning the
puck handles. Especially when you got no time.
Yeah, precisely. And, so it's been a process. I think in the last few weeks, he's turned the corner a little bit. He did score a nice deflection goal last game, has points in back-to-back games. It's something to build off of. He's not going to be a fast track guy to the NHL, but I'm still a guy who he's a guy who I still think long term, could be an NHL player. And I still think a pretty decent one too.
Yeah, well, people are going to be keeping their eyes out. We always appreciate the update, Bill. We're going to get to Flyers goaltending coach Kim Dillaball right now. I had a chance to sit down with Kim Dillaball because, you know, the Flyers have a unique situation in goal. Bill, you can attest to this. With Carter Hart having a young 21-year-old starter poised to be a franchise goaltender, and you have a veteran like Brian Elliott who spent a couple of years here and still competes as hard as anyone, to have that kind of system and to be able to talk to Kim Dillaball about how the goaltending coach keeps their mind and all that stuff in order. So here's the conversation I had with Kim Dillaball before tonight's game. It's Fanatic Flyers Weekly, and we're sitting down today. I'm very excited, and everybody listening probably knows why, because I'm sitting down with Flyers goalie coach Kim Dillaball. Kim, how you doing today?
Doing very well, thanks.
It's rare that people get a peek behind the goalie curtain. Goalies don't speak a lot. Goalie coaches don't speak a lot. And with the development of Carter Hart here, Brian Elliott as his backup, I definitely wanted to speak with you. Now, you spent 8 years with the Los Angeles Kings in the director of player development role, and you worked with a guy that happened to be pretty darn good, an American goaltender as well, and Jonathan Quick. Started his pro career in Reading with the Reading Royals, made his way to the AHL, and you got your hands on him, and the development was pretty astounding, and the finished product was amazing. A couple of cups, a Conn Smythe along the way. What was it like working with a guy like Jonathan Quick, who's got a ton of compete in his game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, first and foremost, you know, he was just a guy that was really, you know, just a great competitor. You know, he's a guy that always loved challenges. The only thing that really he wanted to do, it didn't matter how the outcome ended, it was all about winning with him. So whether it was a 6-5 game or a 2-1, as long as he got that win, that's really all that mattered to him. But you know what, he was a guy that was thirsty for knowledge, a guy that really wanted to invest in his game, took a lot of time to build on what he had in terms of getting stability to his game and just rounding his game out to kind of the finished product that you see today.
The goalies that you've had here in Philadelphia, you've had a few. Is it the nightmare of a goalie coach to have what happened last year, going 8 deep? I mean, that's a tough position for you. I mean, you were next.
Yes, I was next. I was next a few different times. But, yeah, I mean, injuries are never something you like to see at any position. And obviously from the goaltending standpoint, you have to dig deep into your, you know, to your stable to replace guys when you go through a situation with that many injuries. So it was a challenging time for our group and our goaltenders. And, you know, a lot of the guys that came through, you know, did a good job, and it's a challenging situation when you're coming in into an environment and you're trying to gain traction and try and get yourself you know, established, and can be challenging. So it's definitely not a record you want to have to be a part of, but you know what, again, it's something you can't control. Injuries are part of the game, and you got to try and manage as best you can.
And you brought some pretty good guys in with Pickard and a guy like Mike McKenna, who's just a great guy, working with a young goaltender like Carter Hart. Not that this is completely uncharted territory for a young goaltender to make an impression on the NHL under 22 years old. He's a kid that has been preparing for this stage all his life, from a mental standpoint, on the ice, off the ice. Talk about what you've seen out of him up here at this level, really, since you drafted him, and the development that he's had over the past couple of years.
Well, he takes every day as what it is. You know, he doesn't look too far ahead. He doesn't try and plan long-term, you know, what he wants to accomplish. It's about the day-to-day process. So if it's a practice day, it's about getting the most out of that practice. If it's a game day, obviously there's a preparational phase and going through the right protocol to prepare for the game. If it's an off day, it's about looking after your body the right way. You know, getting your rest and your recovery and doing all the little things that are going to help you perform. So I think he's had that short-term mentality and approach to things, and a big, you know, constant for us is focusing on the process and not worrying too much about what's down the road. It's about what's in front of us today.
Why was it so important for you guys? You know, Brian Elliott comes back. That wasn't a foregone conclusion that he would be back. A lot of people say, well, there's other goalies in the system. Anthony Stolarz was here. Maybe that's the option to bring a veteran goalie to be the tandem with a guy like Carter Hart. It's pretty important to be able to show him how to be a pro and handle the ups and downs of a really tough league.
Yeah, I mean, Brian's been a good goalie in this league for a long time, and he's played good hockey for us here through his time in Philadelphia. And there's a relationship there with him and Carter leading into, you know, the decision for him to come back and be a part of our organization again this year. So, you know, there's a lot of variables that lined up that made Brian a really good fit for us. And again, you know, we want someone that's going to go in there and compete with Carter as well. And Brian's done a good job of that. You know, I think you have a competitive environment there. Both guys want the net. They're challenging each other for the net. They raise their level. And again, Brian's a good professional. He didn't take an easy pathway to get to the NHL. So he had some different challenges he had to overcome, adversity he had to overcome to become an NHL goaltender. And I think that's a good thing for a young player to see.
The tweaks to Carter's game, as I mentioned, he's a very technical goaltender. You know, a lot of repetition involved in the way he's prepared his game for this level. When you got him, what was some of the things that you wanted to maybe adjust a little bit? Depth, post-integrations, anything like that?
Yeah, you know what? You know, like you said, he's very polished, very well-structured, and
more so than some of the veterans in the league,
yeah,
by the way.
He's worked extremely hard. He's got a good network of people that he's worked with over the years. So, you know, obviously you look at how he plays the game, and, you know, it's very mature for, you know, for a goaltender his age. But I think the one thing you run into, and we had this through my time in Los Angeles with guys like Jonathan Quick, Jonathan Bernier, Martin Jones, guys like that, that, you know, it's about transitioning their game to the next level. You know, things happen a little bit faster. The execution's a little bit better. You know, so there's different things that your game has to adapt to, being a little bit more urgent, making sure you're aware of what's going on away from pucks, learning when to abandon your structure and be athletic or dynamic, and sometimes just finding a way, be in desperation mode. And I think for a guy like Carter, it's very similar to a guy like Jonathan Bernier, who had such a good, strong technical package, reads the game at an extremely high level. Sometimes at the lower levels, you don't have to be as dynamic or come outside your structure as much. And, you know, like you, we talked about earlier, in our position, we can't control a lot of things that happen in front of us. If a puck hits off a shin pad and ends up on a player's stick at the side of the net, and you have a split second, you can't get yourself over there typically the way you would want to. So you have to do something in a desperation fashion to try and keep that puck outside the net. So at the lower levels, you have a little bit more time to use your structure in those situations. At the highest level, you don't have to. So it's adapting in those situations and find a way to balance your game out a little bit more.
The best goalies in the NHL all have a unique ability. Part of it obviously is athletic ability, but they also have an ability to read plays, read threats, and do those kind of things at an elite level. How's that developed in his time so far here with the Flyers?
I think you can break it down into two different categories. There's more structured reads where pucks are maybe moving around the perimeter, and you can take information in by looking off pucks when they're non-threatening areas and kind of gather information that way. And to me, that's more of a structured read. Then you have your dynamic reads where, like I said before, things happen quickly. The dynamics of a play change quickly. You have to make that read and adjust and adapt. And I think that's been the biggest thing for Carter, is getting better in those situations. And it's more so him not having to face as many of those at the lower levels. And here, things happen extremely quick. And sometimes in those situations there, you know, you don't have a lot of time. So therefore, you got to make sure that you're prepared in those situations. You got to make quick decisions with limited information. That's where sometimes, again, you have to have more tools to rely on in those situations to be successful.
Yeah, and NHL players, they know how to put layered screens on you and things like that at such a level that they know how to make it really difficult on a goaltender.
For sure. Like I said, it's, you know, at this level, people, the preparation on all fronts is a lot better. People know what they're up against every night. They do their homework and the pre-scouts. And so, you know, you're informed on the people that you're going against every night. So you have to make sure that, you know, my philosophy a lot of the time is we obviously prepare for our opponent, but we got to make sure we're prepared. We're prepared to do our job. If we operate at the level we're capable of, and we're detailed and our habits are where they need to be, and we're focused on what we need to be due to be successful, really in the big picture, the opponent shouldn't matter.
Last question for Kim Dillaball, Flyers goalie coach. Two goalies are all different. Some of them like a lot of video. Some of them like a lot of pre-scout. They like to know what guys are going to do on a shootout prior to that game. Some of them don't like that because they don't want to be leaning and get caught looking bad. What do your goalies prefer?
You know what? I have some of the goalies I've dealt with over the years like to have more information, some less information. And again, it's, you know, it's about how you prepare. And I think if you worry about your game first and foremost, you're better equipped to handle anything that might unfold. Sometimes teams change attacks. Some of your opponents might like to do something. But again, we all adapt and change. And some of those changes happen in game. So you can't get too...
Flyers goaltending coach Kim Dillaball joining us on Fanatic Flyers Weekly. Great insight from the man charged with developing the goaltenders, keeping them sane, and helping them along the way. We'll take a break, come back with the pregame show right after this on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.